Oh, it started.
Here we go.
Whoops. We're off. That 5 seconds went faster than I thought it was going to go. I guess the show is going.
Hit the snooze, Bob.
Yeah. How's it going?
Hey.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a little bit, we started late, and I'm a little bit out of sorts because this is a weird point in my life. My wife is out of town with two of the kids, and so I'm shuttle this week. I'm taxi, Uber person, getting everybody to everything. My daughter is insanely busy for a young person. And this morning, I already had to get up and take her to soccer practice and then go back an hour later and pick her up for soccer practice and then bring her back here while she got ready for work. And then I took her and dropped her off at work. So that's why I'm late. And it snowballed my whole morning into, you know, like, this is like out of sorts. So my apologies for being late.
You didn't call me here either.
It's a weird time in life. Like, a lot is changing, and like one of my kids has a job, and
oh man,
you know, it's like,
what does she do? What is her job?
Well, it's actually an internship this summer at our church, and she's an intern with the worship team. So she's planning out music and services, and writing music, and doing a lot of service and stuff with different people. And yeah, so
nice.
It's a really cool opportunity for her. She has an amazing voice. And so she gets to sing a lot anyway, but now she's actually, and she writes music and plays piano and plays guitar and all this stuff. But now she's actually getting to collaboratively write music with some other people in the same group. And so that's a cool thing to watch happen. But yeah. What have you guys been doing?
Well, first of all, I'm a little suspect here. We record in this app called Riverside, and it's got a new interface, and then it says David for me, it says Jim for Jimmy, and then Bob, you might be a robot because you just have a number of 446. Yeah.
So this is an example of doing things differently, like just trying something different. And I was curious what effects it might have when you sign on. It has your name, like, in the little field when you just click, like, go into the call, whatever. And every time I click that button, it starts the recording, and then for the episode, it says Bob, because I'm the host. I'm, like, the one who has the account. And so this time I was like, well, I always have to update that Bob to the episode number, so I may as well do that ahead of time. But okay. It does it the other way around, so now I am a number, and the episode is named after me as a number.
Well, to me, you're more than a number.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm not a robot, probably.
Good.
So, what have you guys been doing?
Dave, well, last week we talked about making the nesting benches. It's basically three sheets of plywood, and they all have a kerf bend, and then each one is smaller, like a nesting doll, and they fit into each other. And then the one of them actually would be a MIDI keyboard stand that would live under my desk, and the other two would probably go to the rental house. And it was yesterday, we had this crazy, we're still working on it, and we had this crazy aha moment of, I still want to use the one as a MIDI keyboard stand, but when we nested the other two together, they just looked really cool as one unit. And I also didn't give myself enough space for the inside one to easily pull out. And so I'm like, well, what if we combined these two into one thing? And so it was like we had this like burst of energy in the middle of the project of it turning into something completely different. So it's still a bench, but it's going to be a bench with a shelf. And so, well, and then we decided, well, we should make the other one not as wide, so there's a little, so it creates kind of a cool little shadow line, and I'm working on that. And I don't know, it was just one of those, like, it started off as one thing and then just completely changed into another thing, and I have to rethink my whole packaging strategy, but I'm gonna kind of work around, maybe like embrace the aha moment.
Yeah, and I was so, gonna ask about that.
Yeah, I like, I think I had a good title, thumbnail strategy to begin with, but this just feels better. So I just have to do some more brainstorming, and maybe the video will perform even better because it's just learning how to embrace those aha moments or being open to them and not being like, this is what we need to do and follow everything step by step. So that was fun. Yeah.
It's interesting because there's two, we briefly talked about this before we hit record, but we didn't really get into it. I had a different kind of aha moment. So that sounds like you had a plan, you had your idea, you had momentum on it, and then you found a better branch. And then you were like, I'm already on this path. I'm going to go down this branch to something better, more interesting. I've been stuck for a couple of days I have this general idea, but I couldn't figure out the subject. And so everything was just kind of stopped. And I was like, I can't make any movement until I at least know what is the subject thing here. And this morning, in between waiting on my daughter to go one place to go to the other place, I was just walking around in the basement, like waiting, you know, and I don't know how, but I had a technical, like, oh, well, if I use these two materials together, it will make this thing better. And then it won't really matter what the subject is, because the thing that's interesting is how I'm using these materials, not the thing that's being made. It was a different kind of aha, because it like broke through something. And now I can get that forward momentum to actually get started. It's a similar thing, but it's also different because
right.
I hadn't started yet. I was stuck before I could start. So
when you had your aha moment, were you trying to figure out a solution, or did it just come to you?
It just came to me.
Those are the best ones.
It's so weird.
Yeah, I always say. I'll tell you with my experience. I always say you just put your subconscious to work. And I do it all the time. You work and work and work, and then you realize to yourself you can't figure out what's next. And your brain has already spent all the energy sucking in everything you're doing. So it knows all the problems. It knows everything, right? And you talk about your brain as if it's a third person. Then you just forget about it. And you go, you know what? Let me go feed the chickens. Let me go mow the lawn. And then your brain is in the background doing all the work. It's literally, you got to set it to compute or render or whatever it is. And then eventually a solution comes to you. And same exact thing. It happens to me all the time, but if you follow my Patreon, you'll see this ongoing series of me fixing a sawmill track for my neighbor. It's this long sawmill track that was hit by a tree, so it's all bent in a couple directions. And I had to break it apart and fix it, cut out the bent sections and fix it. And I kept having, every time I took out this one section, I took it out, but every time I tried to straighten it, I turned around and it was bent again, like, but very slightly, and they needed straight, like string straight. And I just was frustrated with it, and I left it alone. Everything, the welding heat, everything kept bringing it back to a little bit slight to the same direction it was bent. And I woke up in the morning, like, hey, idiot, just cut it in this section, which is something I wasn't thinking about, and then alleviate the bend, and then weld it again. And that's what I did. That came to me after staring at it, trying to solve the problem in the moment. And I couldn't solve the problem in the moment, or at least elegantly. I was really looking. There was ways I could do it, take it completely apart like I already had done. But I was like, I've come this far. How can I fix it without going backwards so far? And the elegant solution came to me after sleeping on it. And it's just an example of what happened to me this week. But that's it. You basically put all the ingredients in front of your eyes and then walk away.
Interesting.
So about a year ago, 11 months ago to be exact, I started getting more sleep. So I turned my 2 a.m. cutoff into a midnight cutoff. Midnight, I go to bed now. I also get up earlier, but I only get up. So I go to bed 2 hours earlier and I get up 1 hour earlier. So a net gain of 1 hour of sleep at night. And this is to help me clear the toxins out of my brain, reset every day and get a little bit more sleep. And that and various other routines and lifestyle changes, I just feel better. And it could all be totally just me being in my head, but I feel like I come up with solutions a little bit quicker and just better solutions. And I think one of those reasons is that hard reset of getting a little bit more sleep.
Not having chaos too helps a lot.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
Chaos could be in like several deadlines, or there's people visiting me. Sometimes there's four people in the house that I'm kind of managing. in the way of just, you know, managing that they're having fun, not really getting them up and out to work or anything, but just making sure if I have a guest that they have something to do, whatever. That type of chaos always hinders solutions and problems solving.
I think I've slowed down a lot in the last year and a half or so, just in general, slowed down the video pace and stuff. And I haven't necessarily been sleeping more, but I do feel like the just the pace of the day is very different. And I think it's had a similar effect on me, that trying to be a little more intentional about what my time... Well, it's weird. I've been more intentional about what my time is for. Part of that means that some of that time is for nothing. Like, I actively take a lot of my morning... I have coffee, and instead of like hurrying through coffee and hurrying through stuff to get to the workout, to get to the shower, to get to work, it's like, no, I'm just going to like sit here for a while. And just intentionally slowing down, I think it's had some of that same effect on me. It's just, it's freed up some space. It's taken out of this.
Yeah,
this,
for sure.
There's a quote from that book that I've talked about a million times about, ruthlessly eliminating hurry from your life.
Yes.
And so that's it's super hard to do, but
it is. So part of this lifestyle change is I do my 30-minute morning walk every day. No music, no podcast, no nothing, just me and my thoughts for 30 minutes, and that's a good slowdown. But also, since I get up earlier, after my walk is my shower. And the goal is to be done with all of that by 8:30 a.m. And between 8:30 a.m. and 9 a.m. is my sit down, relax, watch YouTube, read something. Like, that is my, like, before I start the workday, I just have a half hour of hanging out with the dogs, drinking coffee, nice and slow.
Yeah. It's amazing what, you know, changing up rhythms and stuff within your life can do, whether it's sleep or free time or exercise, or, you know, just having rhythm and affecting that rhythm can really affect the rest of your day pretty well.
Yep.
Jimmy, what have you been doing? I mean, you said you've been working on the
sawmill track and getting back into the Graveyard House, doing some work for the next video for the Graveyard House. I just, if anybody hasn't paid attention, I released a video for the first time in about 5 or 6 months because of the winter. Not much was going on because of the winter. And so we got stuff done, so there was a video posted last week. This week's video is going to be this cart that I showed for a few minutes on Instagram the other day. I made a cart for Johnny Walker that gets pulled behind a golf cart for an event. I never hooked it up to the golf cart, so I never saw the pictures of the final result, but the event did take place. Apparently everything went really well. My bar tap system that I installed seems like it worked because nobody complained. That's how I know. That's how I know everything went great. Nobody complained. I the guy who hires me, my guy Chuck, he said, it was everything went great. I'll send you pictures. And that was it. That's why I love working for these liquor guys. They're so self-sufficient. Like, if, for instance, something broke, they would just fix it on the fly. They would never call me back and be like, what happened here? They would just say, everything went great. They're the best clients I've ever had in my life. The minute it leaves my door, I never hear about it ever again unless they need another one. It's amazing. And so that's out, but I have the video, so I've been editing the video for that. It's nice. About every 2 or 3 weeks now, I make sure that I don't have a video to make, whether I just skip publishing or whether I have something that's been in the can that needs to be edited. And those weeks I get so much done because it's not just focused on getting that episode done. It's focused on everything else, cleaning up, fixing, organizing. And so I'm trying to make that happen at least every 2 weeks, or at least sometimes twice a month.
Isn't that weird?
What do you mean?
Do you think that's weird?
No, I just don't have like a universal focus, because when it's video week, it's like...
That's my point.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel weird that the thing that pays your... Oh, man. Okay. The thing that pays your bills. I've thought a lot about this, and I hadn't really been able to put it into words until you said that. The thing that helps you pay your bills causes you to be less productive than you actually feel like you should be. The time that you take off from me, the time I take off from trying to accomplish something on a regular basis that is a moneymaker, is the time that I feel the most, not productive is the wrong word, but like accomplished, or I have the most momentum, or I have the most, I don't know. It's like, what a first world thing to say that my job is in the way of being productive.
Right.
But
I've created so many things.
But that's
things
a, like
for me
a
to
legit
manage.
Feeling, you know? Like you when you're focused on getting a video done or a project for a client or whatever, like everything else that moves along throughout the week has to sit aside until you're done with that thing.
Yeah.
And I that have thing so much is just manage. Like a drop in the pan, and you move on from it and you go on to the next thing, so it doesn't feel like you've actually accomplished something. But all those little things that improve your home and improve your health and all that stuff is what makes you feel like you're moving.
I don't have the help that I used to have. You know, I had Willie and Taylor and, you know, people living here, and every morning I know this was taken care of, that this is the things I didn't even have to think about, like weed whacking and stuff. And I have a guy that does my lawn most of the time, but in between I'll do it. And he weed whacks to a certain extent. I can't expect him to weed whack everything. He'd be here for 3 days. So, you know, weed whacking is another one of those things that I'll do every once in a while. And so in between videos, they do a lot of house maintenance, shop maintenance. Rob's been a huge help with shop maintenance. And we're culling the herd with machines. We're selling machines, getting rid of stuff that I don't use that much. And we look back and be like, you used it once in 3 years. Okay, sell it. That type of thing. But it's just nice to know that I can look forward to those little islands of getting everything else done. And it's nice. It's just the pressure's off. Because typically, the way my schedule, because I edit everything, I do everything myself, typically it's turned into a Saturday, Friday night. I get my video to like 98%. And then Saturday, I spend the day reviewing the video a couple times, adding if I need some pickup shots, I'll do that. But usually by Saturday night, whether I'm out on a date or whether I'm doing whatever, it's always like before I go to sleep, I have to finalize everything. So before we go to bed, I'll come in, fiddle, make sure everything's perfect. But when that pressure's off, it's like, you want to go to a museum? Yeah, let's go to a museum. Let's see, you want to go for a hike? Yeah, let's go for a hike. I don't have to sweat making sure the video's 100. And it's a nice feeling, but it's not every weekend. Then I'd feel like I have absolutely, if I did that every weekend, I'd feel like a complete loser. Like I had no job.
We went on this little mini vacation last summer, and we stayed at this resort on Lake Erie near, on the other side of Cleveland. And I made sure, like, I caught up on all my emails. I had all my videos done for the month. I did everything that I possibly could to make sure there was nothing I could think about while on this little mini vacation for 4 days. And it was the most enjoyable. And it wasn't even, it was like a cheap vacation. It's like, it's just 2 hours away, but it was the most relaxing and one of the most fun vacations I've ever been on, because I was just free of worry. It was just, it was so nice.
This past, what are you doing, Jimmy?
I burned my arm welding the other day. See, I welded, then I leaned on it.
Oh.
Ouch. And I'm like sitting here, I'm feeling, I'm like, well, burn still hasn't gone away because I'm putting my elbow down on my desk. And I just remembered I hadn't even looked at it. I don't even know what it looks like. So this happened 4 days ago. It's the first time I'm looking at it because I can't see it.
He's just flexing. Yeah, he's trying to show
his arm. I'm not flexing.
Oh, look, I got this burn right here on my giant bicep.
Are you kidding? I don't even have a bicep. I got like those weird skinny Irish arms.
So this past weekend, David, to go off that idea, we went camping for the first time. So my kids are teenagers, and when when we were pregnant with my oldest, we had this conversation. We went camping while we were pregnant, while my wife was pregnant. And we had this conversation about, like, you know, our kids are going to grow up in the woods. They're going to grow up camping. And it's 16 years later, and we went camping for the first time. So we did not do well. In fact, we were setting up the tent, this big, like, 8-person tent that we have, and I was making the kids help me set it up and teaching them how to do it and everything. And I told them the story about, we bought this tent when we were pregnant with you because we thought we're going to have a family, we're going to take them camping all the time, we're going to go ahead and invest in this big tent. And that was the first time we had used it. Wow. In the woods. I mean, we've used it in the backyard before, but Anyway, we went camping. Same kind of deal. It was like $30 for a campsite. Like, that's what we paid for, you know. And our schedule is really full in our life. And so this was the first night, first weekend that we had in... And we've been trying for a couple of years, and you know, with the right season and the right time and the everything, this was the first time we got to go. So we're like, we're going to go camp for one night. Drove 2 hours, 2.5 hours to Red River Gorge, which, if you've never been there, is absolutely beautiful. It is unbelievable. It's like you're on an entirely different planet. And camped and went and ate pizza at this local pizza place that was just unbelievable. And then we went and hiked and we played in water and we crawled through caves and went under rocks, and it was so good. It was so good. And I didn't think about work or videos or what people think about me or any of that stuff the entire time. We were just there in the woods, and it was so good. It was so good, and it was cheap. But it's being able to, that I would love to be able to build that into talking about rhythms and stuff. I would love to be able to build that sort of escape. I would love to build it in so that it wasn't an escape, honestly. So that those kinds of trips were part of the schedule, to where like you're building a rhythm of rest and of separation from the stuff, rather than those moments and those little vacations and those hikes and those weekends being the outlier. Like, those should just be part of the routine, I think. You know, I don't know how we get there. And it may not be something that I can effectively get to while my kids are teenagers and still at home and stuff. But I think that, man, it does all of us a lot of good to have that kind of, you know, go somewhere, do something that's not work and not schedules and not whatever. So
there's a couple of problems when you run your own business, and the one is thinking you should always do more, you should always be better, you should always improve, and it should always evolve. And then the other problem is this: you're always thinking, this isn't going to be here forever. I need to embrace now. I need to make sure I am setting the tone, the pace for the future, or that there is a future. And so you're just constantly sucked into, how can I keep this going and make it better?
There's a funny meme that's been going around, and I'm not going to remember it precisely, but the sentiment is, I'm sick of this 9-to-5 job, slaving away at this 9-to-5 job. I'm going to start my own business and work 24 hours a day. And never sleep and never have money. Something to that effect, you know. But it's obviously rewarding in its own way.
Well, you know, it's weird. When I started doing this full time, I actively, for 10 years now or whatever, I have actively tried to stick to a 9-to-5-ish. Now, obviously, it can't always stay to that. You know, I mean, there's deadlines and there's things that pop up like any job. But I've tried really hard to make it a reasonable, normal start-finish time amount of my week and stuff like that, because of my family. And only in the last year or two have I started to realize that I was, in trying to create a boundary, a good boundary, I was actually creating a boundary that didn't need to be there at all. Like, I'm the boss. I don't have to work 9-to-5. I can work 9-to-1. I can work 1-to-4. Like, it's a good idea to have a boundary, but that boundary doesn't have to be an 8-hour day. It doesn't have to be a 5-day week. You know what I mean? Like, it finally dawned on me that, wait a minute, why am I working any more than I have to? What about the rest of my life? What about, you know, and building something for the future is part of that. That's part of the reason that you do that and stuff, is making sure that you're investing in the right things and you're actively working towards something. But I just realized that I was putting this constraint around my time to try to be smart, but even that is putting a constraint that I don't necessarily have to have. If it makes the most sense for me to work from you know, when the kids go to bed to 3 o'clock in the morning, which it doesn't make that sense. But if that was the case, I should be doing that, because then I'm building the rest of my life around opportunity rather than like building my life around a work day that's enforced by jobs that I don't work at. Like, you know, anyway, Jimmy, you
had something. I was going to say the counterpoint to that is when you go to your bank account and you're like, whoa, I need more money. So you stay in the shop because you feel...
Yeah.
It's an emotional crutch, though, because spending 3 extra hours a day in the shop isn't always necessarily going to equal thousands more dollars in your bank account that month. But I do feel a sense of I need to plant seeds so that I feel hope. And that's what I do. I overwork because what I need... I'm not necessarily like dollar per hour is going to be rewarded, but I'm planting seeds. I'm like, I need to design another leather bag. It might not give me money next month, but it will plant seeds that will harvest in months from now.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Christmas. Or so that idea of, oh man, I'm panicked because I don't have the same amount of money that I had this time last year. Let me go out in the shop. Let me just never leave the shop.
Yeah.
But it's like I said, it's not necessarily dollar per hour, but it's satisfying that itch of like, am I working hard enough? Or am I working too hard at the wrong thing?
Hmm. I think that may be my point. Is that
a lot of people work really hard at the wrong thing and they're like, why aren't I making more money? I'm like, you gotta charge more money. You gotta get clients that can pay for the things you really want to charge. You know, you're spinning your wheels. A lot of people that listen to this podcast spin their wheels constantly and they think they're working hard, and they are working hard. They're working hard in the wrong direction, or their audience doesn't have money to pay them what they want to be paid. So you got to work half as hard and get paid twice as much. And that's like me fiddling around in the shop and tinkering is me trying to figure that algorithm out.
And I think that's kind of where I got to with this train of thought is not to just do less, not to like, you know, I'm only going to work when I actually have to, you know, eat or whatever, but to trade the like, 9 to 5 are reasonable times to work, and I should be working until 5. Or I could work really intentionally and plant seeds and design this thing because it has to be done, and then I don't have to work for the rest of the day. Or I don't, you know, whatever. Like, I'm imposing a schedule instead of doing, like what you're saying, doing the right things at the right times. That don't have to be on a schedule. They're the same schedule, you know, David.
I think, I don't know if we'll get to our topic, but the topic was giving advice, and we talked about sometimes it's not, you just ignore the advice. there's a lot of advice out there for entrepreneurs saying, you are not your work. Right? And for a long time, I wanted to believe that. And a few weeks ago, this is a thing that I struggle with mentally, but like, I think I am my work and I enjoy being my work. We don't have kids. My kids are my two wiener dogs and the things that I make. Like, I feel I don't want to always turn it off because I enjoy the creation process. I enjoy coming up with new ideas. I enjoy editing video. I enjoy the woodworking. And I do feel like I am my work. And so there is not a time to just turn it off, because it just kind of eases into, oh, now it's time to watch a movie or whatever with the fam.
So my response to that, my feeling about that, is that I think that statement that those videos people whatever make is well-intentioned but incomplete. So you are not your work in that your value as a person, as a human being, is not a reflection of how good you are at what you do. I think that is truth. I think we are far more valuable than the productivity that we do or the number of things that we sell. That, like, those things are an effect of us, but they are not, they don't define who we are. So I think you are not your work, but you are also your work in that it is a part of you, just like I am a husband, I am a father. Those are not the same things, and I'm not those things to the same people. I'm a husband to one and a father to four, but I'm still both of those things. I am also a son. I am also a sibling. I am also a maker. I am also a video creator. And so I am all those things, but I'm not ever only one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that that statement gets lost on, or that it misses, is that you're not only your work. You are your work. Your work is evidence of your creativity and of your skills. That's not all you are, right? So that's how I would look at that thing.
Well said.
I agree with you,
mm-hmm.
You know, but I think it's an incomplete statement.
Bob, are you working on anything?
I think a lot.
working on thinking.
Yeah, I think a lot these days. Yeah, actually, I've been working on stuff. I don't have it here in front of you. I was going to show you. I do have it in front of you. So did I tell you guys about this? This is not coming out for a few more weeks, but did I tell you about mm-hmm. this weird little yeah. doohickey?
The little camera thing.
So, yeah, the camera mount. And the camera is not in here to show you the camera, but it's a handheld camera with a little built-in tripod on the base. And so I wanted to be able to use the tripod to set it on things, but also hook it to tripods, a big tripod, and other stuff. So I made this little mount that has a tripod connector block on the bottom of it. You set the camera down into this holder, but then this red part is flexible TPU 3D printed stuff with rare earth magnets built into it, like in the print, which was super cool. And so this, and I don't have anything magnetic here, this thing will stick to the side of a car or to whatever, and it'll bend and flex to the shape of the thing, and you can pop the camera in it. And you can see it's covered in dust because I took it out and I worked on the Ghia the other day with this, doing body work, and it was super cool.
Nice.
Not only did the thing work, but I actually made some like significant progress on the body work. Yeah.
The material that's 3D printed that's flexible. Mm-hmm. Does that take one of the 3D printers that has the case where you can control the temperature, or could I print that on my A1?
You should be able to print it on an A1. Yeah, I printed this on the Prusa XL, which is not in an enclosure of any kind. As long as you have the right, you know, profile for the material, it's a TPU. It was actually really easy to print. I didn't have to do any special anything for it. And this stuff, doing this project with this material for the first time, led to the aha moment that I was talking about this morning. Just, you know, I've 3D printed so many things that are rigid, and I've gotten to where now I think about new projects in the context, not all of them, but in the context of how 3D printing can be useful as a rigid surface, a rigid material. And so doing this the first time and seeing how flexible and how well it worked and how easily it printed, now I'm going like, oh, so 3D printing doesn't have to always be only the rigid material in my processes. Now it can be a flexible material. It can be a gasket. It can be an underlayment for rigid pieces that need built-in joints. You know, I'm starting to connect the pieces of basically a new material. And so this was really cool because having success with this particular project led to the aha moment in the next one, which is an entirely different thing. But it was the missing piece for figuring something else out. So that was really cool. But also just the fact that I got to work on the Ghia, and I did this whole project so that I, not only, but partially so that I had an excuse to go out and do more body work and film it. Mm. Because I can't do another video about Bondo or, you know, body filler stuff by itself. And so
is that interesting how one thing might inspire you to get back into something else because you approach it somewhat differently or with some new tool or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, it's just a different angle to do the exact same thing.
Can I ask you guys, do you like that? I have it pulled up on my screen to maybe buy it. Do you guys like the Osmo Pocket 3? I see you both use it a lot.
100%. Yes.
What is the up-close focus? It doesn't have a zoom, does it? Does it have that digital zoom?
It has digital zoom, but I don't know how close.
You got to be in like 4K to crop it a little bit, right?
It is a very cool camera.
I mean, is it aside from its its movable head, what, if any, advantages does it have over the four action camera, the number four, the fourth?
I mean, the gimbal is actually... So anybody that's listening, we're talking about the DJI Osmo Pocket 3.
Yeah.
And it's a little tiny, about 4 inches tall camera with a screen with a gimbal on it. So the camera is built into the little gimbal. So it'll do stabilization, both facing forward and facing at you for like selfie type stuff. You can record in 16 by 9 or in vertical, horizontal, vertical, either one.
The screen
one.
Turns.
Yeah, the screen flips, which is a really cool interface. You can do slow-mo. You can do time lapses on it. You can do shooting 60 at 4K. And you have, I think, full manual control over everything about the camera as far as exposure mm-hmm. and all that type of stuff as well. So I built presets for mine that match my big camera. So, and one of the cool things, the things I like most about it, yes,
Dave? It has the audio receiver built into it. So,
yes.
That's a huge thing. So, you have the wireless mic, and then you don't have to.
The 4 has it as well. The 4 action camera has it as well, okay. But it's an upgrade. It's a firmware upgrade. But so, I've been using it that way now, too.
The thing I like, one of the things that I've been using a lot about it is it has face tracking. And so, you can set it on something and then look at the camera. You tap the screen on your face, and then it puts a green box around your face, and then it will move the gimbal to follow your face. So there's been a few shots recently in our videos where, like, I walked around a table doing something, and the camera was at the end of the table, and it followed me around the table to do the thing.
The gimbal will do 180? 360?
I don't know if it'll do 180. Will it?
It will.
I don't know.
It'll go all the way around, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa,
so,
that's cool.
I mean, it'll, if it can see your face, it will track it. And, so the and then there's also cool little things where, like, you can say, track my face, but put me in the,
you know, like a third. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's not centered in the window. And so it's a little bit different shot. You know, it's a little more compositionally interesting. It's cool, man. It's real cool.
Yeah. I think I might buy it. I've been
you
thinking
will.
About it.
I know you will. I'm surprised you haven't hit the button.
No, I just got a lump of change from somebody that owed me money. So every time somebody gives me several thousand dollars or more, or tens of thousands of dollars, I'd buy one thing for myself.
Immediately spend it?
No, I buy one thing for myself that'll improve my something. Whether it's workshop stuff or camera gear, I always buy something. Just so when I look at that, I go, oh, that's from that time I did that thing. That's from that time I did that thing.
You get new calipers?
I got new calipers. It came in the... I just got it this morning, so I haven't even used it. But we talked about calipers last week, and I asked people to send me what is a higher-end one that I can buy. And overwhelmingly, when I say overwhelmingly, I mean like 8 people reached out to me and said, you want this brand. Yeah. I have no idea how to say it. Mitutoyo. It's a Japanese company. And it just arrived this morning. It feels great. It's got good movement. People say the battery lasts for years. And they're known for their high caliber calibration stuff.
The battery lasts for years. That's an improvement.
Yeah.
So I don't know enough about that type of tool. Like, these are the ones that I was talking about the other day. The Bluetooth ones. Every set of calipers I've ever seen has a plastic case with steel finger wheel on it, steel everything else. What, and this is not sarcastic, this is a legit question, okay? What makes calipers better? Like, these are different companies, I bought them in different years, and they are almost identical, except for the electronics, you know, within the
the
measuring thing, but...
The ones that I held up last week, they're supposed to be in here, but I don't see them. The little thumb wheel, it's a metal one, and really it had really good reviews on Amazon, but it was you know, $25 or $35. But this little wheel on this one feels completely different. It feels like I have.
And how much was that one? The Mitutoyo?
$125, I believe. Yeah, so higher end for sure. And I don't know. I just want one where the buttons continue to work. like unlike the other ones. Yeah.
And maybe the electronics are the kind of
yeah
differentiating factor. I'm just curious because I know somebody who's like really into precision, like machinists probably could tell you exactly why this one feels more precise or is more precise or whatever. I just don't know what the difference
and is. And one of the main differences, I have no idea if this is going to show up, but you get more digits, so you can get even more precise, which is not something that I need. It has what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 digits. That's way too much. I'll never need to do anything that precise. But that's one of the things I noticed right away. But there's something about buying a higher end tool that'll make you want to take care of it more, and hopefully it'll last longer. Like for the longest time, this is years ago, when I was working at the ad agency, I kept losing my pens because you didn't care about them. It was just you buy a pack of 10 and you just lose them throughout the week. And then I was gifted a really nice, heavy cross pen. And I took care of that thing for years. And I still have it because it was like, this thing has value. So I'm going to make sure I don't lose it. And it always lives here. And so I'm hoping I take that approach to these calipers.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Did I tell you, speaking of tools, did I tell you guys about the 3D scanner I got?
Yes. Yeah. Have you done anything with it yet?
I kind of did a test, the first real test with it yesterday. I have this bin behind me that's all the stuff that was on my electronics desk that I just like. So it's a bunch of tools, a bunch of little boxes and pencils and a bunch of random stuff that just kind of dropped down in this black bin. And I figured that would be a pretty good torture test for trying to scan, you know, that thing. Bunch of different types of surfaces, different colors and all this stuff. So I did a scan of that last night, and it is absolutely not a complete scan in that I don't have a 3D model of the entire thing. But before we were recording this morning, I processed that point cloud. It makes a point cloud, and then you have to turn that into a mesh, and I'm still learning this stuff. But it's pretty amazing. Maybe I'll scan. I don't know that this scanner is better than anything else. But being able to get a 3D model that is textured and colored of something, even if it's not 100%, you know, like, accurate as far as the physicality of it, the details of it, the fact that you can just scan something and then you have a 3D model that you can spin around is just wild to me. So looking down in this bin, there's all of these pencils sticking out of a pencil cup, and there was a ruler like at an angle coming up and sticking out of the box, and there was a cardboard box with a flap that was open kind of halfway. So there's undercuts, there's reflective stuff, there's cylinders that are sticking up at different directions, and it got all that stuff. I mean, not like every side of all of that stuff, but it's all there enough that if I wanted to 3D model something to fit in there around the things that are in there, I could do it.
It would,
and that's just bizarre to me.
I'm assuming this is going to be something in excuse me, in the near future where AI can help with those things. So you scan something, you scan a cup, and it's got things in the cup, and it realizes, okay, the inside of this cup is a perfect circle. So I should know to remove a bunch of those points and just make it a perfect circle. This is a pencil. It has 5 or 6 sides or whatever. And it should, like, I see AI really helping out with that stuff. And
I would think so, yeah.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, if it can use a flat image right now to know what something is, just by taking a photo, it can know a lot of details around, like, that's a coffee cup. So, yes, it's going to act this way. It's going to have these general things to it. Having even a rough 3D model of that thing, in addition to an image that you can, you know, AI around and stuff, yeah, it seems like it would be able to do a much better job. So, and I think Bamboo has an AI scanning tool that uses AI, has a scanning tool built into their app that uses AI to do some of that stuff for you. And I think it will actually, I haven't tested this, but I heard somebody talking about it. I think you can take a picture or maybe even upload a 2D picture of something, and it will be able to create a 3D object from that picture using what you're talking about, I think. So, yeah, I don't think that's far off at all.
Can you guys explain to me? I just bought the camera, by the way.
Of course you did.
So I was fiddling around on my phone. All of a sudden, I was into this deep menu. I thought it was going to take 1 second to hit buy. But besides that, can you guys explain to me a little bit about what there's like a passive protest going on Instagram about people saying I don't want my stuff used for AI? I can have an idea, but maybe you guys are smarter than me on this topic.
I was just going to say, I think the general thing is these AI bots are using copyrighted material.
Was there an announcement or something that I missed? Like, was there something we needed to agree to? Because all of a sudden everyone's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Or maybe there was an announcement that Instagram is now allowing some AI programs to scan.
Okay, so there are two things. There are two things. Instagram, so if you use within Photoshop, if you use any kind of AI to do any kind of correction or fills or remove a cloud or add a cloud, Adobe attaches, like, part of this was made with AI in the metadata of that photo. So then if you upload that photo to Instagram, Instagram sees that metadata and it will put a tag on there saying made with AI. And the issue is like, oh, if I'm removing a blemish, is this photo really made with AI? Because we've been doing this even before computers. Because
can you just do a screen grab and eliminate the metadata?
You could. So
I think those models. So the AI bots is really a model where thing goes out and learns details from a whole bunch of sources, and then it uses all of those details that it has gathered to then be able to, like, make choices. And it's creating a library of reference that it uses to then be able to generate things. So when you go to one of those and you say, create a picture of President Nixon riding a unicorn or whatever, it knows that I saw pictures of President Nixon this many times from these places. I know what a unicorn looks like because of this, and it uses all this reference. And so a lot of people are saying, I create art. You're muted. I didn't hear you.
I said, we got to make sure somebody in the audience makes that picture. But go ahead.
If you create art, what they're trying to protest, I assume, is opting out of their work being used in that reference library, because these bots are behind these walled gardens that nobody can see into, and so you don't know what they're consuming as their reference. And they're building these bigger and bigger models constantly, but there's no accountability for them to say, I used this image from artist A as part of my definition of what a unicorn looks like, And so then when you have images that are generated with AI, they are effectively downstream from original art. And that artist doesn't get anything from it, or even reference to it, or anything, So I think that's one of the big complaints. And the same goes for writing. I mean, ChatGPT has gone out and, I'm assuming, I don't know this, has gone out and learned from all the writing that humans have ever done.
I'm going to say something controversial.
Okay.
Isn't that exactly what every human does anyway?
It is.
It's exactly what every one of us does. We are completely the result of everything we've been inspired by, looked at, liked, loved, read, watched, took in.
But imagine.
Visited.
I agree. But imagine you purpose-built a human for the sake of creating based on other people's stuff without reference. We're not purpose-built for that. We do that naturally.
Well, it's like having a Roomba. It's like Roomba goes out into the world.
I see the problem with it, and it doesn't affect me in the way that, like, I'm going to protest about
it. I mean, I personally don't care, but I guess one day when that ChatGPT visual generator creates a visual image that looks exactly like, it basically... It doesn't know that it doesn't know to discriminate. It doesn't be like, oh, wow, this looks too much like so-and-so's work. I have to really dial it in and try and make it a little bit more inspired by versus just This is basically what I saw last week. You know, we do that. We do. I mean, I know comedians, you know, with my brother and the culture of comedy, people hear stuff and then write that joke and go, wait a minute. Yeah. Why does this seem so familiar to me? Oh, because I heard it 2 months ago when I was at some open mic. And that's what we all do. You know, each one of us, every one of us, everything I've made, everything we've all made has been the net result of watching billions of images come through our brain.
Well, think about it this way, though.
That's all problem-solving generator.
A closer-to-home example would be you put out a video about your graveyard house. And in that video, you talk about laying the stone foundation and how you did it or how you had somebody do it and what the problems were and what the solutions were, whatever. And you make this video. And knowing that your intention is maybe not education, it's entertainment or whatever. But you, when somebody in the future goes to Google and they're like, I need to lay a stone foundation underneath my house, you can see it right now. The first thing that pops up in the Google search results is an AI-generated summary of the answer to that. And so what theoretically is happening there, I don't know, is that Google is processing your video. They're taking the information out of that without reference and putting it into a model that then is spitting out the answer to that question to the user rather than serving them your video to answer that question, which means you lose out on the authority of having the answer to that question. Lose out on the brand building of having your video shown to a person and the ad sense.
That actually explains like some of the controversy I've been hearing about.
Yeah. So, and honestly, the more that, and I'm not afraid of machines, so don't hear me like, you know, but the more that that happens, the further and further the original creator of a piece of information or the curator of a piece of information gets from the user.
Right.
The further they are pushing, not they, the further we are being pushed away from the person who wants to find what we do. Because there's these layers of interpolation and like sifting, you know, these layers that just go through and sift the internet to like build these models to be able to answer questions, which is really super helpful and everything, but it puts this big black box in between the viewer and us, bigger than was already there. So I definitely see the fear of it. Now, that's from a purely informational encyclopedia standpoint. If you want to see art made by a person, if you want to see how Jimmy makes a thing, you're going to go watch Jimmy because you want to see him do it. You don't want to see a text description of how he did it. You want to go watch him do it. So there's a big difference there, but there's also a lot of overlap. So
is that Nixon? Dave, you did that right away.
In the meantime, I used Midjourney to make President Nixon ride in a unicorn.
So it's oh my gosh.
It's that easy,
and it's perfect. Oh, that kind of looks like Nixon.
Yeah, I would say the face is a little off, but it looks like an actual black and white photo.
It certainly does. It's the right hairline, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, his nose is weird, but the unicorn looks pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it's even black. Did you tell it to be a black and white photo?
No, it gave me four options, and I picked the black and white photo.
Oh.
The presidential unicorn.
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to put that in the show notes for everybody. Oh, man.
Wild.
Anyway, so yeah, I think that's some of the worry around the AI stuff from a creator perspective. Yep. And then we talked about music. I don't want to get into the whole AI thing again, but we talked about music a few weeks back, and I saw an interview with this guy who's like a futurist. And he was talking about this dude in Sweden who has like 400 pseudonyms, like artist names that are all him, and he uses AI to generate music in different styles under each one of these names. And so he basically like flooded Spotify with this ridiculous amount of music that was all AI generated, and he built playlists to curate all of this stuff and then it got fed out to all these different people. And so he made a whole bunch of money. And, you know, like, maybe the music's good. I have no idea. But the fact is, like, he's using those tools in a very specific way to game the system and just make a whole bunch of money.
Barf.
It's wild. Yeah. Anyway. I had something else I was going to talk about. I don't know what it was. So we did kind of have a topic, and we're super far into the episode. But you somebody asked you for advice. Mm-hmm. You want to give us
a... Yeah, I got an email from somebody going to college for graphic design, and they asked if I had any advice for them. And it was a really nice email. So it was one of those, like, I'm going to sit on this for a couple days and answer as best I can and put some thought into it. So I thought maybe we would talk about advice for the next generation. But one of the things that I realized is when I went to school for graphic design and then when I went into the graphic design world, there was a couple of disconnects. And one of them was that the client doesn't always know what's best for them, and you can't, and you can give them all the advice in the world, but they'll still want what they want. And so I was telling this person, like, sometimes you just have to jam a bunch of copy, a bunch of text into a thing and ruin the design, because that's just the way it is. And another thing I was like, the other thing I wasn't expecting was, at first, you are going to do all your designs, your layout or whatever is going to come from a creative director, and you are basically going to do what they want. And so you might not have creative input, and you might have to earn the right to input your creative input. And so that's just a couple little tidbits that I wasn't expecting, that wasn't taught in college, that was my experience. And things are totally different now. And back then, everything was turned in manually, physical. All you had to print everything out, and you had to mat and mount it and cover it with tracing paper to protect it. And there was one professor.
Envelope for the photographs of the chromes.
And I just couldn't believe, like, this is not the project. The project is supposed to be this magazine ad layout that I'm supposed to do, but we're spending so much time with the presentation. And now, as an older person, I realize those details, that presentation matters. But at the time, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was in art school and I went for graphic design, everybody said, I want to be an art director. I was in school for maybe 2, possibly 3 years before I really even understood what that meant. And then when I understood what it meant, I want to be an art director. I want to be the one that tells everybody beneath me what to do. Or what, like, my opinion is going to be so important that I'm going to have that position of authority over 5 or 6 designers in a suite. And I thought to myself, there can't be that many art directors. There has to be people that do stuff. So my graduating class was like 600 people, or 500, I don't know, I have no idea, 100 people. That all want to be art directors. And I never felt like I was part of that pack. I didn't even understand what an art director was. I was always so entrepreneurial minded, just because that's how I grew up, and that's kind of how my dad inspired me, even though he was a civil servant. Me and my brothers were always like, no matter what we do, we're going to do it for ourselves. So I never really fit that model of being an art director. I guess I was an art director in my own world, but I was the art director and the artist. And then if I had an assistant, ultimately, which took a few years for that to happen. But I just always thought it was so funny how everyone's like, I want to be an art director. Like, people would stand up in class and be like, well, when I'm an art director, I want to go work at this one and that place and that place. I was like, good luck. There's a lot of work to get to be the boss. You got to spend years being an underling before you can be that type of boss. Unless you start your own company. If you hit the ground running, which has its own set of complications.
Yeah, it's a whole different job, honestly. Yeah. Advice is weird in that, I don't know, I guess we give advice on this show. I don't think that's the intent, but we end up doing it. We give advice on this show. We've been talking the whole time about, you know, what to do with your weekends and life rhythms and rest and exercise and all this stuff. So I guess that's advice, but I think it's also just really important to be super careful about advice, about taking it and living by it, but also even asking for it. Couple things. So I know this morning I was working on this aha moment project that I was talking about. And every time I do this, I want to do this thing, and I could go look it up and see how other people do it, but I'm not going to, because I don't want to. Like, I want to figure it out on my own. I want to do it wrong. I want to get to the thing, right? And I know that the response from that in the comments will always be, well, like, why didn't you just look this up? And that's totally valid, but it's not that I think I know better. I want the experience of going through it, right? And so sometimes advice can be helpful in not making you go through something painful or helping you get somewhere faster. But if you enjoy the process of going through it or getting that, you know, going on that journey yourself, then the advice can actually like kind of leapfrog some of the experience. And so I think you have to be careful there about that. Also, we always look at people in our lives with, I don't know, like we see their authority or lack of authority in things. And so, you know, if we're talking about the art director thing, I may look at somebody that I work with who's an art director and think I should ask them for advice about how to get to where they are. But the problem with that, not always, but one of the problems with that potentially is that, you know, imagine you and another person are two lines that are parallel, and you may start parallel and you're moving in the same direction, but as you move in the same direction, you're wavy and you go left and right and you move. And so you have two wavy lines that are basically moving in the same direction. At some point they cross over, and that crossover point might be art direction. And you're like, hey, how did you get to be an art director? Their description is going to be the wavy line that got them to that point. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? But the wavy line that you got to that point is a different wavy line. And so their advice is based on their experience, based on their process, their life. Look at Jimmy's face. Oh, it's froze. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
You held your nose up like you were about to sneeze or like wince or something, and then the camera froze, so you were just like this. Yeah, anyway. So the paths to get to an intersection in life are very different, and you have to be careful about asking for advice on somebody else's path. Not all of it is going to translate to you. And sometimes I think when we see people in authority, we take what they say at just, they're successful, I like them, they're a solid person, and so I'm going to do whatever they did to get there. And it's got some danger to it. You got to be really careful there. I'm super hesitant to give advice to people about career stuff or school stuff, because my path to get to where I got to was pretty windy and weird and maybe not the best way to get to where I got, but it got me there. So I'll get a lot of emails that are like, hey, I want to be an engineer. Where should I go to engineering school? I'm like, I have no idea. I'm not an engineer. I didn't go to engineering school. Like, I have nothing to help you with there. And it would be stupid and maybe a little bad for me to be like, here's what you should do. Like, I have no authority to tell you what to do about engineering school.
The advice I give most people when they ask me, and this week I spoke to a person, shout out to Kat, I know she listens. Part of what I said to her and what I said to somebody yesterday was basically, if you want to create an online portfolio and show your work off, it's only going to help your business, especially if your work is good and improves over time and you're having leaps and bounds and you can connect with somebody on an emotional level saying like, I tried this and it worked, or I tried this and it didn't work. Both of those will be connectivity if you're looking to develop an audience. But more importantly, put your portfolio online to help your business. And then the net consequence could be that it becomes a career, but don't go into it thinking that it's going to be a career. Put your portfolio online if that's what you want to share with the world. And if you want to develop a business out of it, most likely the first part of the business will be you selling products that you show off to your friends and family. And then if you channel grows, if your page grows, then you start selling products outside of that circle, and then that's where it grows from there. And then eventually, if you want to be an influencer, if people are looking at you because you're putting up such amazingly fun, cool work, then you become an influencer. But don't get on there thinking you're going to be an influencer straight away. I think that's like the long-term consequence of being online. But initially, it's just your online portfolio. If you're going to be taking pictures of spaghetti and hamburgers, that's a different situation. But if you're going to be an artist making stuff and showing it off, it's your online portfolio to develop a client base or a sales base. And from there, if it becomes an influencer thing, that's something different.
You don't think pictures of spaghetti could be art?
It could be. I mean, it certainly could be.
I'm just kidding.
There's an artist, by the way. Actually, you know what? Let me find it. Rachel sent it to me. I was going to recommend Gum Fetus. Go check out Gum Fetus, who makes really cool sculptures that we've been looking at for 10 years. But this other person who makes marble master sculptures, but with a CNC machine. I'll show you.
Huh.
I'll show you.
Gum Fetus?
Yeah. G-U-M-M. I think it's two M's.
Is it? The name might be like Jason Freely or Freemy or something.
Yeah, Jason Feeney, F-E-E-N-E. Okay, yeah.
Somebody I've followed for a long time.
Yeah, I think he actually went to school of visual arts. I could be wrong, but I think so. Like after me. So Adam Smith is going to be my recommendation this week, and I'm going to send it to you. And again, this goes back to AI? Or is this real?
Question mark?
What he does, and I'll show you just to the camera, but I'll send you guys the picture. See that? He takes these beautiful Greek images and then jams them into a box. That's real marble, by the way. That is a real marble sculpture of, he's a New York artist somewhere, Rachel knows him. And he does these incredible sculptures, and he'll take classic figurines and jam them into an imaginary box, and then it's all done on a CNC machine for the most part. These marble sculptures are done on a robot arm that come in with water and water jets, and you know, huge sculptures. I'll send you guys one. And then obviously this one is being polished by human hands.
Well, is that your recommendation? Or are we already doing recommendations?
Yeah, I'm going to say that Adam Smith and Gum Fetus, two Instagram accounts. There's probably YouTube accompaniment, but.
All right. Well, let me thank our Patreon supporters, and then David, you can tell us what your recommendation is. I've got a good one. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon, who supports us and lets us talk about AI again and stuff. We are very grateful.
In the after show, we're going to tell them that this whole episode was generated by AI, but until then, we won't tell them.
I got some cruiser news for the after show.
What?
But big thanks to everybody over Patreon. For real, like, legitimately thank you for the support over there. We're super grateful. Especially the people that go above and beyond. That's Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad from Mancrafting Works by Solo, Alvarez Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. But also people like Dryplate, whose name is actually Adam, but his username is Dryplate. Everybody at any level over there gets the after show, so they will be able to hear what we're going to talk about. The after show is a separate podcast feed that you only get through Patreon. The link, you can put it in your podcast player, and so you can listen to it. And you can watch it on video. We do after show video, too, and that link is also on Patreon. So if you want to get that, if you just want to help us out, go over to patreon.com/makingit and pick a level. We would appreciate it. But and also, we've gotten a few messages that I've passed on to the guys this past week from Patreon supporters.
Very nice.
I don't always respond to those, but hear me now saying that I read them all and then I pass them on to the guys if they're relevant to them. And we're really grateful for those questions and comments and links and stuff that people send over there. It's really
cool. Thank you.
David.
Yes. So I'm gonna give two picks because one is relevant to the advice, and that is Jack Conte did a talk years ago And the video is called Patreon CEO Gives Bad Advice. And in the talk, he talks about why he doesn't like advice. So that's one pick. The other pick is, it's this show, it's on HBO, and it's called The Power of Film. And it's phenomenal. It's 6 episodes about movies and how they affect our lives and what makes a movie good, what makes a movie stick. And it is just so good. It's hosted by this older gentleman. He's a UCLA professor. A lot of directors and DPs and people have studied under this guy. And it's not all just about classic movies. I mean, they also talk about stupid movies like Batman Returns and stuff. So it's yeah, that's a little jab. I don't care for superhero movies except for The Joker. That one's fantastic. But anyway, it's absolutely fantastic. It's 6 episodes. So good.
Right on. Mine is another channel. Like a few weeks ago, I said one similar to this. I just ran across on YouTube a guy named Jake Frew. Do you watch Jake Frew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, film guy, right?
Yeah. 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 So I came across this video by accident called The Art of Paying Attention. And it's beautiful. It's just... He's like the other guy that I was talking about a few weeks ago, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head now. Similar in that they are filmmakers and they have one really good little thing to say that's about life or about something, and then they build this beautiful little 5 or 6 minute film around saying that thing. And man, it's a good one, The Art of Paying Attention. And then he had another one. He's had a couple other ones that I've watched since then. There's one called You Are More Capable Than You Realize, and it talks about changing your environment. They're really good. I showed a couple of them to my kids last night, and I'm like, here's a good message, you should watch this. And they did, and they liked it a lot. It's cool. So yeah, go check out Jake Frew. This is kind of a weird thing to say, but he seems like somebody I would want to be friends with. And that's like a weird internet distant. You know, I know there are probably people who say things that about, I'm not going to say me, about you guys, where they're like, David seems cool. He's like somebody I would want to be friends with. And that's not weird to hear, but it's weird to be, from my perspective, saying, hey, there's a stranger out there I think I would be good friends with that I'll never actually get to. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Jake seems like a cool guy. Yeah, that's my recommendation.
It's a good one.
You guys got anything else for this week? Yeah. I want to tell you something about The Sixth Sense in the after show, too.
The movie?
That's it for this one. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Catch you. Thank you.
Love you.